Welcome to the Capital Connection, a weekly program questioning New York State leaders on a variety of issues. Your host is Dr. Alan Chartok, political scientist and professor emeritus at the University at Albany. Distribution for the Capital Connection is made possible with the help of New York State United Teachers, representing professionals in education and healthcare, online at nysut.org.
It's the Capital Connection. Hi, I'm Alan Chartok. Joining us this week is columnist and Albany bureau chief for the New York Daily News, Ken Lovett. Welcome back, Ken.
Good to be back.
We always love it when you're here because you're keeping your eye on the whole range of things that go on in New York state politics. And the two words that everybody's looking at now for a very lowly office considerably in New York City is Eliot Spitzer. Unfold the whole thing for us.
It was very strange and unexpected. Sunday evening, word started spreading. I got a tip probably around 7 o'clock at night that this was a possibility, that Eliot Spitzer may be entering the comptroller's race down in New York City. At the time, Scott Stringer was the favorite. He was really the only Democrat running.
He's a former assemblyman.
He's the current Manhattan Borough president.
He's term limited, right?
He's term limited, but he was going to run for mayor.
Right.
And basically, the unions helped him cut a deal that he dropped out of the mayor's race, and they cleared the way for him to run for comptroller, basically unopposed. So here he was running. He figured clear sailing. And especially coming into this week when petitions are due Thursday, this is Sunday evening, so he's probably sitting home saying, I'm looking pretty good. And then the bombshell announcement came around Sunday night. Eliot Spitzer was entering the race, and it really upended the whole thing. And obviously, as a political story, it's dominated the week.
Well, the newspapers have been uniform, I think. Why should I fight with you? But the newspapers have been uniformly sort of coming down hard on Spitzer. The inability to remember what he did, in my opinion, as Attorney General, which was stupendous, and separate that out from his personal peccadillos. I can't remember anybody having the kind of impact as Spitzer did, not while he was governor, but while he was AG. Seems to me, I'm editorializing a bit here, that if you make him controller of the city of New York, he will use that power to do the same kinds of things. But there are those who really don't agree with me, Arthur.
No, there are those who think he could overreach. There are those who think it's bad news for the next mayor. I mean, could be good news for the taxpayer, certainly, but certainly to have a guy, an ambitious guy.
What do you mean, good news for the taxpayer?
Well, as I was going to say, nobody thinks that Eliot Spitzer is going to be happy for the rest of his life being New York City comptroller.
Where they have term limits and he only gets 8 years.
Eight years, yeah. Exactly. Right. So here you have a guy who's hyper-aggressive, who's hyper-creative, who doesn't exactly play well in the sandbox. He now is going to be overlooking the city finances. He's going to be overlooking the mayor, the agencies. He's going to have reports. He's going to use it to up his profile, using the pension funds to push for corporate governance issues. Kind of a mini AG's office, you know, the same type of approach, but within the context of the comptroller's office. So, you know, he very easily could overshadow a mayor.
So out comes, and you, by the way, again, editorializing, which I don't do, of course, ever, is the idea that the people who are running for mayor are a fairly shallow crowd to begin with.
Well, you know, it is not, you do not have the powerhouse players that you had with Rudy Giuliani or even a Mike Bloomberg, although nobody really thought Bloomberg. You know, I don't think anyone at the time, or Ed Koch. You know, usually you have these supersized egos and supersized powerhouses. You don't really have that this time around. It's kind of a lot more of the insider crowd that's been around. You know, people like Chris Quinn, you know, the city council speaker who's been around forever. You know, Bill Thompson, the former city comptroller. So it's more the machine that's around. And don't forget, you know, amazingly, in New York City, where it's, what, 5-1 Democrat, we haven't had a Democratic mayor in 24 years, I
sure.
think.
When the Democrats put the same old up, people say, hey, they hold their noses, they vote for the Republicans, even though they're Democrats.
Exactly.
Yeah. So let's go somewhere else right now, if we can, and let's go to Shelley Silver. I find this very interesting. Silver was the target of the month for a little while there. He was the guy who they were coming after because he had defended an assemblyman named Lopez, who was a very powerful man, and they had used public funds to defend the guy.
$103,000, not to defend him, but to settle two sexual harassment claims against him.
Right. Lopez, who is now being referred to by some as Gropez, obviously lost a lot of power. He had been the head of the Brooklyn organization. He could make judges. He could make...
Yeah, he was a housing committee chair, which is not a terrible committee to be on when you're from New York City and in the assembly.
Sure. So he had a lot of power. He loses power. And then everybody lands on Sheldon Silver, the speaker, for doing this. Along comes somebody like Spitzer. It's always amazing to me. And does this thing. And the name Shelley Silver is not heard. I think there was a point there where it was sort of nip and tuck with Silver, who now is not seeming to be in any danger.
I agree. I would have said, and I probably said it when I was on the last time, that I thought Shelley Silver was on the ropes. I would have said there was probably a 75% chance that he wouldn't be speaker again come January, particularly once the session was over, that there could be a push to get rid of him. I think several factors happened that I don't think that's there anymore. The very powerful Black, Hispanic, and Latino caucus put out a letter basically supporting him. The women of his conference have been really out there supporting him publicly, even with some letters. And the governor, seeing the chaos that occurred at the end of session in the Senate, would prefer to avoid the uncertainty that getting rid of Silver would cause in the assembly. So I would say right now, Shelley Silver is safe. But that doesn't mean it's still not an issue. I think, you know, it's still been out there. Even today, my paper, we had an editorial,
the Daily News,
really trashing Linda Rosenthal, an assemblywoman from Manhattan, who has been one of the biggest critics of Elliot Spitzer since he got into the race for comptroller. And it wasn't really taking exception with her arguments against Spitzer, but saying, where were you when this was going on with Shelley Silver? Why didn't you speak up at that time? And basically saying that political expediency trumped ethics and moral values.
The only way that they would have gotten him, in my opinion, Shelley, is if there was so much heat from the Daily News, that other paper, and the Times and all the rest of them, who would have said to the assembly members, we won't endorse you if you don't do this. But that's not going to happen.
Well, there was heat, and I still think it's possible. I don't think he's out of the woods yet. I think I would be surprised if he's gone. But, well, you know, there's a lawsuit against him and the assembly, and we don't know what comes out of that. What if there's $1 million settlement? Then it becomes an issue going into next year's campaigns, not only for lawmakers in the city, but lawmakers all throughout the state who are going to be asked by their editorial boards, who are going to be asked by their opponents, their Republican opponents, would you support Shelley Silver as speaker when you get back to Albany, if you get back to Albany? So I don't think he's clear yet, but I think it's going to take another shoe to drop for this to really get rid of him.
Well, let's put it this way, and I just want to point out that we're talking to Ken Lovett of the Daily News. If he's coming out of the forest, as you suggest, he's got one foot out of the forest into the clearing. I think at least we know that. The governor was, I don't know how to put this, but the governor was sort of seriously embarrassed. He said he was going to come in and be the sheriff of Albany. He was going to clean it up. He didn't. He passed something called J. Cope, sometimes referred to as J. Joke, which was a new ethics commission. It had one major value. It covered everybody as opposed to just one segment of the government. Okay, so it didn't work out. The governor gets embarrassed. At the end of the session, he tries to put forward an ethics package, yet another ethics package. The legislature thumbs its nose at him. He gets angry, and he puts up something called a Moreland Act Commission to investigate dirty dealings in government. Take us for a little tour of what that is all about right now.
Well, he put together a 25-member panel that has 10 prosecutors, a former U.S. attorney, that he says is going to look at, you know, not only corruption that's illegal, but really to root out the legal style corruption and then put out reports to make recommendations, which, you know, reports in Albany are a dime a dozen. I think he's hoping that this commission primarily can find enough embarrassing details. Again, maybe not illegal details, but where so-and-so got X amount of money and then introduced this bill and then gave money to some local community nonprofit that benefited after giving, you know, somehow getting money connected. So I think he's hoping that that will embarrass the legislature into acting. You know, I've seen the legislature is not easily embarrassed to take action.
You can say that.
Now, what they've also done in a unique partnership, and it's worth noting because he really doesn't trust Eric Schneiderman, the attorney general. The attorney general really doesn't trust the governor.
I was going to raise that with you.
And he gave Schneiderman the power to deputize the 25 members on the panel with the idea that if they do, they can investigate, and if they do find wrongdoing, they can then refer it to the attorney general's office, not just DA's offices, but to the AG's office for potential prosecution.
Are you old enough, Ken Lovett, to remember Wyatt Earp, the series?
Of course.
Well, Wyatt Earp was the town marshal, but every once in a while, he would run across, he'd have to go out of sight of the town, and then he would arrest somebody, and they'd say, you can't do that, you don't have jurisdiction out here, and he'd open up his vest, and he'd show, yes, I'm also a deputy U.S. Yeah. marshal, so I can do it, I have that power. This is what Cuomo did with
Schneiderman.
And those guys, as you say, didn't always get along together.
No, they didn't, but first of all, the governor was on record at one point, he had proposed a panel, an independent panel within the Board of Elections to root out corruption and wrongdoing and all the other things. And he said at the time, back in the spring, if the legislature does not do this, I will unleash the attorney general because, you know, he has the power to refer the AG to give him jurisdiction over the legislature, which, you know, they don't normally have. An AG just can't investigate. He needs to be referred into the case. So this is his way of following through on that. He gave them the power. That gives a kind of a boost, a little steroid boost to the commission. Now we'll see what they do with it.
But Ken Lovett, he still has to get along with the legislature to get things passed. And he has now cast the dice.
Yeah.
And it looks to me like they're thumbing their nose at him. I don't think they care anymore. When he came in, he was poison. They were being very careful with him. Now, on everything he wants, they just say, basically, go to hell.
I think he's reached that point. You know, he's threatened this, really, since the campaign. If I don't get what I want, we're going to. For 3 years, we've heard Morrowind, Morrowind, Morrowind. So eventually it was either put up or shut up. But also, you're right. They are not as afraid of him. The Republicans who worked so closely with him the first 2 years were deathly afraid at the time because of redistricting. The governor had kept threatening to veto any lines that were not drawn independently, which would have really, if he did that, would have been the end of the Republican leadership within the state Senate. So they worked with him. They gave him pretty much everything he wanted. But once they got past that, and once they passed the gun bill earlier this year, I think they were shocked at the blowback from the base. So I think the Republicans finally said, you know what? We've had enough. We're going to start acting more like Republicans now. If we agree, we will definitely work with the governor, particularly on the fiscal issues. But we are not going to keep pushing through his progressive agenda that is going to, in the end, kill us. So he lost them in that regard.
Well, let's talk about what parts of that progressive agenda he lost.
Oh, let's see. What did he lose? He lost the decriminalization of marijuana. So far as women's agenda, you know, especially the
abortion.
Issue of abortion, he did not get that. There were a whole host of things that he pushed that, you know, that they just said no to.
But, you know, I love this Alice in Wonderland. We call the legislature.
Campaign finance reform, public financing.
Oh, very important.
No to him is on that. Those were the two big ones, the abortion and the campaign finance and the decriminalization of marijuana, particularly during stop and frisk efforts by the NYPD, which was huge for the downstate Democrats in particular, the minority Democrats.
Well, all of those things, you're right. He loses all of those progressive things. But there's something in this Alice in Wonderland world, which is so interesting, and that is that there are more Democrats than Republicans in the legislature. And it's astounding to me. And by the way, I happen to think Andrew Cuomo is largely responsible for the way that that came down. He said he would veto their self-serving apportionment efforts. He didn't do it. It was a major thing. Now, I still believe, personally believe, Ken Lovett, that if he calls those Democrats into a room in the state Senate and says, you are all going to be in one party or else I'm going to kick butt, he'd end up getting his way, but he can't do that anymore.
Well, plus the rules won't allow it as easily right now because what the Republicans smartly insisted on was for this coalition, this, you know, bipartisan coalition to break up, the only way you can change rules during the session is you need 37 votes, and there aren't 37 votes there to change the rules. So even if the four-member independent Democratic conference say, you know what, we're done. We're going to just go over to the Democrats.
Yeah.
We're going to go back to the Democrats. It still wouldn't work because the Republicans would still have control of the chamber, you know, in much the way they do now.
You think Andrew's rolling around at night saying, "Darn, I really cooked my own goose"?
I don't think so. I really don't. I don't think he trusts the Senate Democrats. Even now,
No, he doesn't.
Even after this year, he will not commit to campaigning for him next year. I don't think he really, you know, I think he likes having the Republicans for two reasons. One, he has a foil that if he has to beat up in an election year, which he will, on the abortion issue, on these other issues, that helps him.
So they're the bad guys.
Yeah, they're the bad guys. It gives him someone to attack. But when he needs, you know, fiscal restraint, when he needs, you know, budget issues and tax cut issues, which I think will be an issue next year, I think then he needs the Republicans. And, you know, it's interesting. Liz Krueger, a senator from... jailbird Krueger. I was talking to her yesterday about Elliot Spitzer, and she's, you know, she thinks she's eminently qualified to be comptroller, but not sure she can get past the prostitution thing as a progressive woman, she said. However, she did take a little shot at Andrew Cuomo in that when she was citing the merits of Elliot Spitzer, she said he's an aggressive progressive and he's someone who fought to regain control of the Senate for the Democrats.
And he did.
From day one, he tried to turn it when he could have cut some kind of deal with Joe Bruno. I think, you know, the current governor, Andrew Cuomo, is a lot more pragmatic and said, you know what, I'm going to go in, I'm going to get what I can from this Republican Senate, I'm going to work with them, and then the politics will take care of itself.
There was a piece in the Associated Press about George Pataki. He's being sued. Want to explain all of that?
Yeah, back when he was governor, he had a program that you had a lot of sex offenders who were getting ready to come out of jail, and rather than allow them to come out after parole or to be paroled or come out when their terms expired, he had this thing where if they were deemed dangerous to the community, that they could be locked up, civilly confined in mental institutions if they were deemed dangerous without, you know, even after their jail terms were up. They got sued for that. These six really scary dudes, at least what they had been convicted on, are suing, saying, you know, you violated our rights. Basically, we termed out in prison and you still kept us locked up. The state has since changed that policy where, you know, you have to go through a procedure where a judge has to act and you can appeal.
Yeah, the judge, the Pataki's administration got wrapped on the knuckles for this by the courts, who said, hey, they still have rights.
Yeah, well, basically what they did was they muzzled these people, brought them right into a mental hospital and buried them there.
Which is so interesting to me. I mean, because my position on this has always been pretty clear, which is, okay, let's assume that a predator, a sexual predator, cannot change. Let's assume that for a second. Then what you have to do is pass a law that says you get caught, you go to prison for the rest of your life. Fair enough, easy. But if you say you go to jail for 15 years, and then you come out, and as soon as you, oh, by the way, we're sending you over to the mental institution right now, that isn't the way to do that, because that is probably, I hate to say this, taking away the rights of these guys.
No, certainly, and the courts have ruled that, and what the state had tried to do, which has passed the legal muster, is say, okay, everybody who gets out of prison who, you know, was in for these certain crimes will get evaluated. If they are deemed a threat to themselves or to the community at large, then they go through a process where they either get civilly confined, you know, if they don't fight it, or they can go before a judge. A judge will have to order it.
And the judge will.
And then after a year, they get to come up again before the judge, as opposed to just waiting for the mental hospital to say, okay, you're cured, you can go out.
Okay, man, there's a second part of this. We only have 4 minutes, but it is so interesting. And that is that Pataki, who was being sued, didn't like the representation that Eric Schneiderman, the attorney general, was providing for him. It's his job to defend the government. And went and hired Abby Lowell, who is his partner in his law firm and who is a superb litigator, and said, I don't like the way you're doing it. But the way he was doing it was deemed by the judge, it's too late now. You can't do that, right?
Right. The judge said you can't change the argument that you're using right at the last minute when the trial's to begin. And amazingly, Pataki's in the courtroom. He's watching all this during the trial. And like, I guess when they gave opening arguments, he was very demonstrative. When his critics, he was, you know, nodding and fuffing and, you know.
Fuffing.
You know, just, yeah, he didn't look happy to be there. At the same time, Elliot Spitzer's running for comptroller.
Okay, so then the other part of this is that it looks like Pataki is in trouble and could lose the suit. What would that mean to Pataki as an individual?
I don't think much anymore. Is anyone really even talking about George Pataki anymore? You know, certainly we'll see what if they're monetarily and who is on the hook for it, whether he would personally be on the hook or whether he can make an argument that it was an action he took as a state official and thus the taxpayer should be on the hook. I don't think, even if he lost, I don't think his image would be hurt much, especially with those who are his supporters, because it's hard to come down on the side of sex offenders. And if George Pataki lost because he went overboard trying to keep sex offenders out, I don't think that's going to hurt his image much.
You make a good point. George Pataki, to some degree, surfaces every time there's an office, a presidential office, a vice presidential office. Somebody says, there's a rumor planted that Pataki is interested in the position and really still may think he could be president of the United States. Any chance?
I think I have as much a chance, but I think a lot of it has to do with money. You know, he puts his name out there every so often. He raises some money for a PAC. It allows him to fly around. It allows him to go on the Sunday morning talk shows. You know, he was a surrogate for, George W. Bush. He was a surrogate, this time around. So I think it's not a surprise that he likes his name out there. But first of all, even if the Republican Party was going to go at the height of Pataki's quote-unquote popularity for a moderate, pro-choice, liberal Republican, I think it would have been Rudy Giuliani before George Pataki. I just don't think he has that juice within the National Party.
Well, I certainly agree with you. In the end, you got a minute, but the reason that there are so many shenanigans in Albany is because I'm afraid that people just don't give a damn what goes on up here.
Well, I mean, it's going to be interesting to watch the New York City election. I don't disagree, but, you know, now you've got Anthony Weiner running, you've got Elliot Spitzer running, and you've got Vito Lopez all running for city office. That's city office.
But I think they care about the city. I don't think that people care about the state.
Except Lopez and Spitzer, their problems started on the state level. We will see how forgiving. Can you imagine if all three win? What does that say for the electorate?
Well, it says that they can forgive.
They could forgive. And again, I agree. I don't think people follow Albany as detailed as closely as they do local or even D.C. politics. But it matters. It definitely matters what happens up here.
Our wonderful friend who comes by every once in a while to give us the whole landscape of Albany politics is Ken Lovett. And Ken, you're always invited back here. I read your column in the Daily News and think it's always insightful and that you do a very respectable job of making sure that everybody's hands are kept close to the fire. Thank you so much, Ken Lovett. Thank you so much for being with us, and we'll be back next week.
The Capital Connection is distributed with the cooperation of the public radio stations of New York State. David Gustina is the producer of The Capital Connection, a production of WAMC Northeast Public Radio in Albany. Support for The Capital Connection comes from New York State United Teachers, representing professionals in education and healthcare, online at nysut.org, and NISCASA, the New York State Coalition Against Sexual Assault, working to support men in their decision to end sexual violence with the My Strength Is Not For Hurting campaign, online at nyscasa.org.